Jackie, Jeremy Turkin, and I swan dived from the 44th floor. Not 45th, including the mezzanine. Straight into 1994's The Hudsucker Proxy, starring Tim Robbins and Jennifer Jason Leigh. You know, for kids. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us a family here.
Raising Arizona.
Okay. I'm not going to sit here and debate.
Cargo.
Spoiler
Barton
alert.
Fink.
Endless spoiler alerts.
Oh, brother, we're out there.
Okay, guys, let's tone it down.
Jackie, you're a liar. I can't
Something
hear.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana.
Oh, serious man.
All right, guys.
Auto accident.
I don't want Santana Praxis.
Santana Praxis.
Man, it wasn't there.
Accept the mystery.
The man wasn't there. Billy Bob Thornton, Fargo.
Never talk over me ever
again.
Yeah,
that was
you.
The most important part, was her saying the title of this show and the subtitle of this show, which
Accept
is...
Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
Exactly.
Except for the misery.
Wow.
Try to keep the sound blocker in front of it. That
actually,
pops
just don't
your
touch
from
it,
popping.
Jeremy.
Or don't touch it. Just don't touch the mics at all.
We
That's
set this up, and we know how it works. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Accept the Mystery, the show where we talk about every single Coen Brothers movie in... extreme, ridiculous, excruciating detail, except possibly today.
Oh, no, today is going to be excruciating, but maybe in a different way.
It's 1:34 a.m.
Is it?
It is. It's 1:34 a.m.
Yeah, it's 1:34.
We just finished watching The Hudsucker Proxy at a house where Jackie is babysitting. By the way, I'm joined by
house
my co-host.
Sitting. I'm not babysitting a
Sorry.
House.
Sorry. I mean, I think of this house as your baby.
This house is my baby.
It's just a very large, inanimate baby that you can live inside.
That's right. It's like the opposite of a baby.
Right. So you're my co-host, Jackie Lechtholze.
What's up, our buddy?
Case dismissed.
That would be my soundboard.
The soundboard made it with me over to your baby.
I love
inside
it. I
in
love
its
it.
Stomach. And also, today on the show, my friend.
He's my friend, too.
Our friend.
Our close friend.
Our close friend. A fellow,
and teammate.
And teammate on our still unnamed team. fellow improviser, co-writer, and co-star of Morty to the Max.
Boom.
Please welcome Jeremy Turkin to the show.
Jeremy Turkin to the show.
Jeremy Turkin to the
it's
show.
Jeremy. What's up, Jeremy? We love you.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Are you a serious
man? Like a serious man?
Oh, boom. I did it first. Yeah.
You did. You beat me
Yo,
to it.
Yo, but like 2009, ugh. What's up in the... Да, конечно.
What?
Jeremy's a little bit Russian too, so he just busts that out for us.
Does vidanya.
It is spot.
Wow, he's saying yes, of course. He's telling me to go to sleep. Lots of different things. Thanks,
wow,
Jeremy.
That's really good, actually.
Also, we should also say we all played a drinking game during this episode.
Oh, that's like your birthday.
Jeremy did the worst. I just chased Jeremy around.
Really, I think Jeremy did the best.
True.
I think Jeremy won the drinking game.
He won. He won. But I just would like to say that he's going to be more disruptive than my dog this episode. Just fair warning.
Your dog's not disruptive at all. Chaya is a dream.
She is a dream. Chaya, you're our best co-host dog
perhaps
ever.
Possibly the best dog for podcasting that exists.
That is right. Oh my God. Biggest compliment you could ever pay me ever, Josh.
Do you want to move on to our first segment?
I would love to.
It's a segment where we get to know our guests a little bit better using questions loosely inspired by
Inside
the movie.
Jeremy Turkin.
Spoiler alert.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh no! Jeremy! In this film, The Hudsucker Proxy, which you watched, Norville Barnes has a big idea, the hula hoop, which becomes an incredible success. What was your favorite childhood toy?
My favorite childhood toy.
That is a burrito bowl that he's chewing, FYI.
Chipotle, homies. My favorite childhood idea.
Your favorite childhood idea, yes. What was the best idea you came up with as a child?
When I was a kid, I wanted to create, produce commercials.
Okay.
My favorite idea.
It's a better idea than I had as a kid. When I was a kid, I think my idea was I wanted to be a taxi driver. Because
really?
I had like an illustrated kids book about being a taxi driver.
I wanted to be
a
shopping cart. What's it called?
You wanted to be a shopping cart. That's a great dream.
Very practical.
I want to be a push cart. Like some dude who sold hot dogs or...
Oh,
like on the street after a Hollywood Bowl show, sell people spicy
sure.
hot dogs.
I'm from Chi City, a.k.a. Chi City.
Chi City.
Who knows what that city is, though?
It's the city that never sleeps.
I don't know. I'm from the city of angels, so I don't know.
It's the Big Apple.
It's
that sounds right.
It's a medium apple. It's called Chicago. I read a book when I was a kid called The Pushcart War, and I think like anyone who drove a Mack truck was the devil. Anyone who delivered for pizza companies like Eduardo's or Giordano's, Illuminati's. Not the Illuminati's.
Illuminati's pizza?
Lou Malnati.
Oh.
Yeah, Lou Malnati created the deep dish pizza for Giordano's and then branched out to his own company called Lou Malnati's, not the Illuminati. So that's the job that everyone wanted when I was 9 years old.
But that's not your own idea.
Right.
Like, do you have an idea that's like your own idea?
To this day, I still have zero ideas that is Jeremy Turkin as an idea.
Fair.
Okay.
Fair question. Fair question. Answer.
I mean, my original question was just, what's your favorite childhood toy? I think...
my favorite childhood toy?
Yeah. What was your favorite toy that you had as a kid? I think, I mean, other than, like, video games, which doesn't count. It's not a toy. But, I don't know, Bop It? Bop It comes to mind.
Bop It.
Wasn't Bop It frustrating? Because if it was, I didn't want to play that.
Bullshit.
It was only, it was only frustrating if you didn't have hand-eye coordination.
To be fair, since I had no idea what this movie would be about, I was pleasantly surprised that Hula Hoops made a really big part in this movie. You know what? Jeremy's mocking me. It sucks, but I don't care. But I actually really liked hula hoops. I think they're so much fun. And after watching this, it kind of makes me think I should bust out a hula hoop. It's probably good exercise. You saw the housewives hula hooping in the commercials, though.
Is it good for like your core?
I'm sure it is. It was so much fun. Did you guys use hula hoops?
Yeah, but it was really bad at it. I think my max consecutive rotations with a hula hoop was 6.
I'm just not looking at Jeremy's face anymore because he's annoying and mocking everybody on this show.
Yeah,
you're making a mockery of this podcast.
He's lip-syncing everything you're saying.
That's right. Let's just dismiss Jeremy from this case.
Wait, it's
a soundboard.
Case dismissed.
I have several.
Case dismissed.
Play
another one.
I'll allow it.
I'll allow it.
Yo,
ad hoc in the hock.
Nah, I don't say ad hoc. Play the other ones.
Yeah, you should say ad hoc. It's just a great law term.
Maybe.
Habeas corpus.
I hate movies. Ugh, I hate movies. That's two catchphrases in one.
That's so unrealistic.
It's going to be a disaster of a podcast right now.
I disagree. I think this is the best thing we've ever recorded.
No,
Say?
Jesus.
Did he say it right?
Yeah, it's perfect.
You really have to put the accent down.
Oh, it was
try
ideal.
To like dredge up as much phlegm as possible.
Well, yeah, it's German, so please.
You're not...
My last name is German.
I thought it was...
It is? I thought it was Russian.
No, my name is actually like, it would be Lechtold and then Zelikovich, but my dad's family shortened it to Zay. So, but a lot of Russians have German names, so yeah.
Because they're basically the same country. Russian, German.
Yeah, we're basically the same thing.
You know what I hate?
What?
Totally off topic. My wife refers to Ukraine as the Ukraine.
I think that's right.
It is the Ukraine.
It's not l'Ukraine.
Well, no, that would be French. It's the Ukraine.
It is the Ukraine. Ukraine.
Yeah.
It's the Ukraine.
Yeah, unless you're Ukrainian, and in which case it's Ukraine. It's not.
Are you Ukrainian?
I am not.
All right, then
the Ukraine.
Can't talk about it.
No, the Mikraine.
Whoa, Ukraine. We all crane.
We all crane
for ice crane. Yo, all right.
That country crane. Crane.
In the film Hudsucker Proxy, Jeremy, lots of people are constantly smoking cigars. Do you smoke cigars? And if not, what do you think of people who do?
GMO, Jeremy Durgan.
Yeah.
I came up with the drinking game for the film Hudsucker Proxy. Anytime someone smokes a cigar, or there's something round that represents time. Or what was the other?
No, it's round. There's like a circle.
Yeah, round
there's
things,
time
pieces,
and cigars.
And
so
cigars.
Three.
And anytime somebody says, you know, for kids.
Right, and you know, for kids.
You know, for kids. then you have to drink. And so many times in this film did this take place.
I love cigars. If you're not going to get to that point, I just want to speed it along.
I don't think I've ever smoked a cigar.
Really?
Yeah.
I love cigars.
I have never smoked a cigar. I did not take you for a cigar smoker. Do I look like a cigar smoker?
I have no idea, but I love cigars. I think they're amazing. My uncle's wedding last year, he's like close in age to me, so it's weird that he's my uncle because his wife is just like a few years older than me. She's my aunt, I guess. But anyway, they had a cigar bar at their wedding, and it was like the best thing that's ever happened to me.
I mean, there's something that's just really like old school masculine about it, and I appreciate that.
Which is
that.
Me.
You're like a Don Draper, you're saying?
Yeah, more or less. I actually really relate to him. I love him. He's a very...
You, to be fair, you also relate to Barton Fink.
Yeah.
You're in some
it's
weird
It's surprising who I end up relating
yeah.
to.
Okay. I have some important points to make about cigars.
Please do.
Which is that I actually think they're gross. And
what?
They're like,
get out.
Yeah. Because they just make like thick, acrid smoke, and they look phallic, and it looks like somebody's putting a penis in their mouth.
I guess.
It does.
It does.
It's like somebody chewing on a brown paper penis.
I don't know. I like cigars. I like the smell of them. I like the taste of them. And, you know, it's not like a habit. It's just something you kind of
And
do.
I guess it is something I just associate with, like, captains of industry and, like, just rich, snobby people. Cigar aficionados. You're that? You're a cigar aficionado?
I'm a rich, snobby person. No, I'm not an aficionado, but I enjoy them. I think they're fun.
Jeremy, one last question. Then we're going to dive into
We can only get three questions out of this guy. Oh. Our audience officially hates us right now.
Wait, no.
Or they're glued. They want to know what's going to happen next.
It's a train wreck.
There's an electricity in the room.
By the way, the reason you can't hear my voice very well is I'm trying really hard to fix something that Jeremy broke.
Yo, give me that, though.
No. Anyway, Josh, keep it going.
All right.
Keep us on track. Please,
Jeremy, and please don't put your mouth on
that.
Do
not touch things.
Yeah, that's like
No, you can't touch that.
Yeah, seriously, don't put your mouth on that.
Man, I can't touch that.
Oh, God.
Jeremy, at one point, Dwight Eisenhower calls Norville to tell him what a fantastic job he did with the hula hoop.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite president and why?
Ooh. Dwight Eisenhower, he on the dime.
He's not on the dime. You said that during the movie. It's not true.
Wait, you remember that from the movie? Who's on the dime?
It's Roosevelt.
Teddy?
No, Franklin.
Oh, FDR.
FDR.
Yo, after
hey, what does that mean again?
After four terms?
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
After four terms?
No, I know what FDR means.
I don't know. I was clarified. It means he's literally on a coin. The dime.
Oh. I thought that was an expression, and because my family doesn't use American expressions, I often have problems with that.
Do they use American currency?
Yeah, but I thought that was a freaking American expression. Like, once somebody said, like, oh, six in one, half a dozen in the other, and, like, I had to think about it because I never heard it before.
A dime, is that something like a ruble? Is that like a tiny ruble?
Ha, 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 very funny. Very, very funny.
Ha, 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 da, konechna.
Oh, yeah.
Idi spot. Go to sleep, yo.
Anyways, who's your favorite president?
My favorite president?
Yeah.
Of what? America?
Of America.
I love FDR because he on the dime. Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
The dime's not even that great of a coin if you're ranking coins. What's your favorite coin? Sidebar.
Favorite coin is the nickel.
False, the gold dollar with the sack of Jawea.
Those are cool.
Boom.
Those are cool.
I don't care about sacks of Jawea. My favorite coin is...
I'm going to say the JFK silver dollar.
The
half dollar. It was a JFK half dollar.
Oh, that one's pretty
those
cool,
Those are
yeah.
cool because those are hard to find now.
My favorite coin probably has to be the dime or the nickel.
Okay.
Jefferson's on the nickel. It's worth 5 cents, and it's the thickest coin.
That's true. That is. You know what? That is true. He's right.
It's
about
way
that.
Thicker than a quarter. Which
I don't think a nickel is thicker than a Sacagawea dollar, though.
Me or maybe not.
It's tough. It can't be. But whatever.
But it's thicker than a quarter, and a quarter is 5 times worth as much as a dime. I mean,
Jeremy Turkin, everybody. Jeremy Turkin.
Okay. Who's your favorite president?
My favorite president?
Yeah.
Probably Barack Obama.
Is he really your favorite president?
Barack Hussein Obama.
Barack Hussein Obama?
Yo, I'm from Chi City.
Oh.
Oh, that's true. Right.
Hyde Park? You know, Chicago, he's amazing. He's progressive for the country.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's unfinished, you know? He might do something crazy in, like, the last 2 years that, like, really sinks him. Like, just, like, I don't know, decide to, like, genocide half the country or something. And then they're like, why did we ever think Barack Obama was the best president?
He ain't my fave.
Who was your fave, Jackie?
Your fave, Jackie?
Maybe, like, Abraham Lincoln, like, freeing slaves and
I mean,
stuff
it's
like
a pretty
that.
Obvious answer, but it's hard to beat Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln was cool. Lincoln was... Did you see Lincoln, the movie?
You know, I didn't, because as you know...
You don't see any movies?
Play the soundboard.
Oh, right.
That's so unreal.
Sorry.
That's so unreal.
That's so...
Ugh, I hate movies.
I hate movies.
A little bit. I mean, I think actually I should see that one, because Daniel Day-Lewis
yeah,
is so
he's
great.
The man. But like, he played like Lincoln was, like, so cool under pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, I respect that a lot, and I respect what he did. So I will take Mr. Lincoln.
But at the same time, if I'm just because I like to be a contrarian and pick a dark horse, I'm going to say James K. Polk.
Oh,
for what purpose?
The 11th president.
Damn. I can't tell you whether that's true or not.
That's
I don't
accurate.
Know.
James K. Polk.
He's your favorite. You should know what number he is.
But I do know that he basically got the American Southwest as part of America. Like he put New Mexico and Nevada inside of our borders. He established a boundary with Canada. He basically kind of drew the western half of the map.
Impressive research. I like that.
I researched
that's
my shit.
That's why I like you as my co-host.
Napoleon of the Stone, James K. Polk, 11th president.
Napoleon of the Stone?
Napoleon of the Stone.
What does that mean?
Y'all are both educated. I like that.
We've dilly-dallied enough. Ugh. Let's talk about this movie we watched. It's called The Hudsucker Proxy.
Hudsucker
in a segment we call The Big Reviewski. All right. Time. Please stop repeating. Okay, please stop repeating everything I'm saying. You're still doing it. You know what I'm about to say, and you're still saying it.
It's very apropos to the movie. Just ignore him.
Wait. Did we do Inside Dermaturgan? Did we do that bit?
We sure as hell did.
We literally just did it.
That was literally what just happened.
The Hudsucker Proxy came out in 1994. Starred Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about? Paul Newman, the dressing dude.
That's for sure.
The guy from The Dressing playing Sidney J. Musburger.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, son, our daughter, Vic Morrow, died at the hands of John Landis.
Anna Nicole Smith.
Let's talk about that appearance.
Okay, I did not realize that was Anna Nicole Smith playing Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yep.
Zsa Zsa.
Exactly.
I see it. This is a change up for the Coens. Jackie, this is the furthest the Coen brothers have gotten from their crime origins so far.
Which I appreciate.
Mean, even Barton Fink was half murder mystery. But this
half,
after
it was too much murder, but yeah.
Well, but only the murder only shows up in
that's
the second
true.
Half.
Yeah,
of the
yeah. It was very dominant though.
But even though this opens up with a suicide, after that things stay pretty light. Mostly just white collar crime.
You're right. There was a suicide.
There was a suicide.
It just
beginning.
Didn't feel like it.
Because
although
it was
like that.
It was like a friendly suicide.
Friendly.
He was even trying to shoot people out of the way as he fell.
Yeah, it was a business suicide.
Right. I mean, I think it's just a sign the Coens were determined to give this movie a happy ending, even if they had to literally stop time and send an angel down from heaven to make that happen.
What happened at the end?
What do you mean, what happened at the end?
That was a real question. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, he discovers the frisbee and he throws it out the window.
That's right. Okay,
yes.
That's just what
that's
I was thinking.
Thing
I knew there was a boardroom scene.
Yeah.
There's just so many boardroom scenes, so I just got them mixed
that's
up.
That's the happy ending. He gets a second chance.
Another circle, if you will. For the kids.
Lots of
you
circles.
Know.
For the kids.
Kids.
For kids. Lots and lots of circles in this movie.
I draw a lot of circles, but more on that later.
Why do you draw circles?
I draw a lot. I doodle a lot. And I started containing my doodles as much as possible to coasters.
Uh-huh.
So that they, they're really cool, actually. I have a few now.
Oh, so,
like
you trace a coaster and then you draw inside the coaster? Or?
No, I just, doodle on coasters from my firm. So we just have, paper coasters. And by now, I'm on my third coaster. And I just, draw circles and doodles and stuff. But I love drawing circles. So let's get into the symbology of circles. I figured you would do that.
Okay. There's a lot of circles in this movie. There's a lot of vertical lines. Stop! You can't do that.
No, just don't look at him.
I can't. Yeah.
Look at me.
Okay. Jeremy, this question is directed at you, even though I'm not looking at you.
I'll answer it for him since he can't focus.
Circles show up all over this movie. And also, there's lots of vertical lines. And the Coen brothers are not shy about deploying both of these visual metaphors to make a point. And Jeremy, I think that you had some deep thoughts about what the meaning of the circles and lines were.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for asking. I'm not a very smart, not intelligent guy. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not Josh Richmond over here.
I don't have a career.
That's true.
Well, that came out a lot sadder than it
was. However, I kind of felt like this movie emphasized a lot about ups and downs in terms of social circles.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. And I felt like a lot of the emphasis was placed on going up to the 45th floor. However, the guy who is able to go from zero, the mail room, to the 45th floor is a gentleman named, Narville Bourne?
Narville Bourne's.
Narville Bourne.
Very nice.
Thank you. Who, in himself, is able to go round and round with the circle, aka, for kids. And then he is able to go from zero to 45. So I kind of feel like this film has a lot of rigid structure from, how do you say, square lines, ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to go from zero up is to circumvent this by going round and round and round and round.
This building, this giant Hudsucker Industries building, is like this just this central monolith that you can see from like every shot of the movie. It's visible from the newspaper office. It's visible everywhere. And you've got Norville Barnes, who starts at the bottom and then rapidly makes his way to the top and then rapidly has a fall. And it's all about just the way you move up in the corporate world and you move down in the corporate world. And also, but also how those patterns are cyclical. Just like, you know, like the stock market is cyclical. Stocks go up, stocks go down. Everything just kind of, the circle of life and death and rebirth, the circle of reincarnation and karma.
As the
Indians call it.
It's true. I imagine if I'm alive in the 1950s, or 1959, 1960, I'm calling it karma. I feel like the only way to go up and down is through the circle, a.k.a., you know, for kids, the circle.
Yeah, and there's also lots of references about him, say, reinventing a wheel or trying to put a round peg in a square hole.
Yeah, I think it's
Wait,
even a moment.
Did they literally say that? Put a round peg in a square hole?
I don't think so. I
would have remembered that.
Yeah. That's my interpretation. He's the round peg full of all these squares and grids, which is this building.
Yeah, I believe there's even a moment he mentions reincarnation, and he's like, and he's introducing it to Jennifer Jason Leigh's character as if it's a an unknown entity, like, you know, recreation, we come back from zero. And
right. I love reincarnation.
And the wheel of time keeps spinning. There's this literal kind of reincarnation and second chance moment at the very end of the movie when time actually stops and an angel comes down from heaven to give Norville his reprieve.
Can I ask kind of Jackie what her thoughts are on that moment? She loved naturalism, which she calls realism. I don't even call it realism.
I just say that's not realistic.
Correct. However,
that's so unrealistic. But I want to defend myself right now because for me, as far as things being realistic, I don't mind if it's silly, like, oh, hey, time stopped. Which, to be fair, if everything stopped, the snow should have stopped too.
Yeah, if you really wanted to be realistic
about
it. But,
you know, the thing is, I'm not as concerned about the physics of situations as I am about the realism of, like, actual relationships in the movies. So I think most of the times, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like my realism has to do with, like, why would this character be invested in that character? Why would this character be in love with that character? Why would this character do that?
I think that's largely true. That and whether the time period is accurate. Those are your two stickler moments.
Right. And that is totally true because it's like, look, if you're going to do like Miller's Crossing, like in the 20s, like make that scene look like it's the 20s. And if you're going to do like 1959, I think this was a little bit too 1952.
Yeah, naturalism is the word we're talking about here and here.
I felt it wasn't a huge deal, but I don't think that's 1959 as it was like 1952, which is fine. It was very 50s in my opinion.
I would say that a whole lot of the stuff in this movie is taken from the 30s and 40s.
It was like 40s to be fair.
It almost feels
so
like
early 50s.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington type of film.
Well, and I'm going to argue, like, for example, I think Mad Men obviously is, like, way more accurate to the time
period.
In Mad Men, they
really care about those little details.
Which is why I love Mad Men for the accuracy, because you know how I love accuracy. But this one was very like, hey, what do you say? Let's, you know.
Yeah, no,
hey,
I mean.
Hey, look, what do you think? What do you do? What are you saying? It's like, it's
and
so.
And that fast-talking style, it really is.
So 40s or 30s.
Really is totally very 30s
true.
And 40s.
So yeah. I really don't think it was 1959, which is fine. But that wasn't even a complaint for me this time around. I just was like, eh.
Well, because
exactly right, guys.
Because to me, it almost doesn't matter that like all these different time periods are kind of mashed together. It's all because if this really takes place in kind of a Coen Brothers fake fantasy universe, it isn't any specific time period. Even if they say 1958, it's more like just kind of a mishmash of tropes from a bunch of different decades.
So that doesn't bother you, though?
That doesn't bother me because it's. Hmm. Because I know it doesn't bother them. Matthew Weiner cares about getting those details right. I think the Coen brothers
just
write,
why it doesn't bother them.
Right from instinct and aren't trying to get the details right as much as trying to create a unique world.
But if they're trying to create that unique world, I feel like then they shouldn't make it so specific. But here there were so many, like 1958. And it really didn't even bother me that much this time watching it. But in general, that would kind of bother me because if you're trying to get a generalized feeling, then don't call attention to the time period, in my opinion.
Because this, I mean, it's just, it's a very, it's so much of the world is, most of the buildings you see are like sets of like elaborate miniatures.
Yeah.
It's a very fake, very constructed world.
The largest, this is the largest budget the Coen brothers had up until this moment.
That is true. This is the biggest budget the Coen brothers have had to work with so far.
Yeah, it seemed like
so they decided, like, hey, let's make a Preston Sturges, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington type
Preston
film.
Preston Sturges and Frank Capra are definitely the two big influences
Huge influence on this film right here.
Just in terms of, I mean, Preston Sturges for sure in the style and the speed, but Capra in terms of like the type of the hero, this small town guy moving to the big city with big dreams and this rags to riches story is a total Capra story. And
Frank Capra all the way. It's almost, you might as well just replace it with what's that Christmas movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
A Christmas Carol.
It's a decent.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a decent life.
Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
Hi, I'm right with the movie reference for once in my entire life.
Can we get
case dismissed.
Boom. Case is in the mist.
Wow.
The mist of Mulholland is representing this case at this moment.
Don't mock me.
Don't mock me. Don't mock me, Your Honor.
I don't think you're on in this case. But.
Okay, so look, this movie was written in 1985. The Coen brothers co-wrote it with Sam Raimi.
Man, they waited 9 years.
They waited 9 years to make it because the Coen brothers thought they couldn't, when they wrote it, they didn't have the budget to make it properly. Only after making movies like Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink and getting the kind of critical respect and studio backing they needed could they actually make this right.
Okay, but did you guys love it?
The first couple times I saw this movie, I thought it was good in some ways and bad in some ways. This time watching it, I liked it a lot more. It's really grown on me.
I could see it growing on me. It had a little bit too much of that Sam Raimi flavor.
This was
for my liking. But
well, I mean,
I can.
I mean, I'm glad you noticed it because I saw a ton of Sam Raimi in this movie.
I totally did, especially after watching what was it, Crime Wave and Dark Man. It was like. And I don't have that much exposure to Sam Raimi, though I know so many people love him, so I'm definitely not like, you know, I'm not shitting on Sam Raimi or anything.
Right.
But it's a little too like gimmicky-ish, but
yeah,
it's fine.
A lot of those, you know, the gag moments and those some of the big over-the-top gestures are very Raimi.
Even just some of the characters were talking, like, hey, what do you say? What do you think? What do you know?
It's like, transatlantic voice. My name is Jenna.
Right.
For Jason Lay. Hey, what do you say? I'm part of the...
That fast-talking thing. But I think the Coen brothers are much better dialogue writers.
Agree.
And I think even if they're talking in kind of a Raimi style, they're just the word choices in the style has just that kind of snap. Don't lick that thing. It's not.
I did not put anything in my mouth.
Okay, good. Because more people are gonna have to come in and eventually use that and breathe on it.
Edie spot, dog.
Yes.
Edie spot.
Telling you, go to sleep, dog. Go to sleep.
Go to sleep.
Raimi was also a second unit director on this.
Oh.
This is probably as involved as he's gotten in an official Coen Brothers movie.
Got it.
And
yeah.
I think you can for sure see his influence. And in the ways that this is not a subtle movie, really, in any way.
No.
It is the least subtle Coen Brothers film you'll ever see. However, Coen Brothers are not really known for their subtlety. They really kind of hit it over the head.
What do you mean least subtle, though? Not like Raising Arizona was subtle.
That's true.
Raising Arizona is not
they
subtle.
They made Oh Brother Where Art Thou's not subtle. They made some very unsubtle pictures.
A spoiler alert, but yes.
Immediately after Hudsucker Proxy comes out, we got Fargo, we got Big Lebowski, we got the films that...
Are these all realistic films?
Naturalistic may or may not be the term you're looking for.
Yeah, they have various levels of naturalism, but for the most part, they tend to operate in a much more stylized mode.
Oh, okay, we'll see how they do. Under my scrutiny.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I wouldn't try to scrutinize those details too hard because I think they're not interested in
this
it.
May
I get that, but I'm so detail oriented.
This may or may not be the only Coen?
Coen brothers.
Hey, it'd be the Coen brothers.
That's gross.
The only Coen brothers film where they actually care about their protagonist enough to not kill him off, or in the case of any film with Steve Buscemi, though he's in this film. Where they're like, hey, we actually root for this Norval Barnes. We want him to succeed no matter how ridiculous it is.
Yeah. They go so far out of their way to get that happy ending and given that second chance to the point of introducing just this literal Deus Ex Machina moment.
Yeah, absolutely Deus Ex Machina. They destroy the whole concept of time, space. They pause time and say, hold on. We're going to have an African-American gentleman stop time so we can explain, hey, it's okay that Norval Barnes has fallen from the 45th floor, 44th, if you not include the mezzanine, and he is going to go down.
But it was fair.
Yeah. This is the only Coen Brothers film that I can think of where they're like, we care about this protagonist enough to stop him, to save him, and to stop all of time and space and all that whole spatial, dimensional.
Yeah, there's some interesting details they dropped early on over the PA system when they announced that Waring Hudsucker has died. They say he died at like 11:59 Hudsucker time, implying that Hudsucker Industries has their own time, and maybe
the future because it's now.
The future is now, and that maybe even that clock in Hudsucker Industries like literally controls the flow of time in this space. To the point that if you stop the clock, then time actually stops.
Yeah, to be fair, that didn't bother me, despite my being a stickler for realism. I think
naturalism.
But you know why?
Okay, what?
It's not naturalism. Oh. It's not naturalism. It's realism. Because, and look, I'm not a movie snob in that way, so I couldn't tell you the specific distinction between that. But the way I interpret it, naturalism would be like the natural laws of nature, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Or at least just...
Is that what Jeremy's talking about?
I think naturalism means that it playing in a way that feels true to the way like normal people
interact with each other. Yeah, like normal physics and human, or like whatever. I think you're talking about like almost like the laws of physics. But I'm not as concerned with that. I'm just more interested in the justifications behind stuff. So because Hudsucker does have this like clock that controls everything,
right.
It makes sense to me that you could stop this clock and that would affect their actual reality.
Yeah.
And I'm more interested like in justifications rather than necessarily, it can only be real life. I mean, fantasy is great, but it has to make sense.
And I think in a story structural way, it's set up nicely.
Agreed.
Because, it's amazing that this is such a Coen Brothers touch. They introduce this blue letter and make a giant deal out of
blue
it.
Blue letter.
Like, everybody's freaking out about the
sign.
Blue letter. Right. Everybody's freaking out like crazy about the blue letter.
I thought it worked.
No, but this is why it worked, is that everybody's freaking out. They zip him up to the top floor. The secretary screams when she sees the blue letter. And then
faints.
But then when he actually makes it into Paul Newman's office, the blue letter's forgotten about. And it's such an amazing... touch that the Coen Brothers could actually pull this off, that they make such a huge deal about the contents of this letter, but then we forget about it because we're more invested in the story of how Paul Newman gives Tim Robbins like his new position.
Well, and I didn't forget about it.
And then when it shows up at the end of the movie, we're like, oh yeah, the blue letter. And it all gets resolved.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, no, they actually did a good job of it, although I was thinking about it for a while, and I was like, excuse me, there's a blue letter, and I want to know what's in it. But then I did forget. So, yeah, well done. Agree.
Yeah. No, I think it was well played, and I think it works for that reason. Yeah. And, okay, but as long as we're talking about naturalism and natural relationships and justifications, I know...
Go Muncie! Go Eagles!
Go Eagles! We've talked a lot, and I think you've talked a lot about female characters in the Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
And how it often seems like they're thinly drawn.
If they're not played by Frances McDormand...
Right.
It's usually, like you said, it's a thin veil of a human or a...
No, that's not fair. Not true, because in Darkman, her character was not strong either. I mean, I know that in reality, she wanted it to be a stronger
Right, she was pushing for it, but it definitely didn't work out
like
that.
It was not, yeah.
But I think she had a good performance in that movie.
Yeah, oh, she great.
She great, yo.
But, and also that they seem to have, like, unrealistic, maybe, attractions to some of the protagonists.
Yeah, that's my problem.
So I'm really curious what you thought about Amy Archer in this movie, who's one of my favorite female Coen Brothers characters. And I love Jennifer Jason Leigh's performance.
I think she did good. I really did. I think her character was way more developed, and we saw so much more of her. To be fair, I mean, I wasn't as focused watching this as I would be on other movies, considering like the time we're watching it and like Jeremy's shenanigans and like
we're definitely
is a party moment.
Yeah, we're definitely watching this under like a party kind of punch drunk circumstances.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah,
but so I don't think I was I wasn't patrolling it as hard as I might normally would, but
right.
Just as far as how I felt about it, I actually felt pretty good because I think her character was. And obviously, like, every movie that we watch, I'm always like, oh, I gotta rewatch it, because I gotta get more details out of it, and you guys have seen it so many more times than I have.
She won a Pulitzer, though.
Yeah. She'd stake her Pulitzer on it.
She's calling like a Pulitzer.
I'd stake my Pulitzer on it.
Pulitzer. There you go. Her Pulitzer. No, I thought she was way more developed, and I could see how he would grow on her, because she worked with him every single day, and she saw insight into him, and, he created the hula hoop and all this stuff. So
right.
Even
though he's kind of this just idiot.
I guess.
You see, though? There's a few moments where he He shows his know-how. He's been to business school, even though it was in Muncie, Indiana.
Right.
Yeah.
And his heart shines through.
Yeah.
In a lot of moments where anybody who's been to the big city will just be like, hey, I'm the big man on campus, whatever. He's risen to the 45th floor.
Right.
It is, I think, one of the big ambiguous questions of the film is Norville Barnes actually an idiot originally?
I didn't, you know what? I actually just didn't think so. He created a hula hoop and a frisbee, and just as a concept, those are like such...
But it seems so dumb for him to show people this circle and think they'll instantly understand what he's talking about.
You know, I think that's funny. For kids. I think it's funny.
It is funny, but it's like, why would anybody ask him a follow-up question about this?
Well, maybe they
Instead
did.
Of like, oh,
well, maybe
right.
they did, and we just didn't see it.
Uh-huh.
Like, in reality, if that were to happen, people would be like, what do you mean for kids?
Right, so but I think in the it's movie, like, but the movie always says, oh, that's nice.
No, I don't think he was ever like, that's nice. It was always like, okay.
Yeah, exactly like that.
But that doesn't mean that like maybe in an actual real world, they wouldn't have followed up. We just didn't get to see that happen. So I love that circle ended up being a hula hoop because I had no way to predict that. So mm-hmm. I'm glad nobody, like none of you spoiled it for me as you were apt to do.
And but, it's funny because it's like the marketing for this movie when the movie came out totally spoiled. The poster for the movie is Tim Robbins holding a hula hoop.
Ah, good thing yeah. that I avoid spoilers
exactly.
everywhere and anywhere because yeah. I was like, what do you mean a circle? And I thought it was really cute because a hula hoop is literally that. So yeah, I
it is
great.
Literally
I think
a
the
circle.
The film came out, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Literally, yeah.
And, as we see, the first act of the film is all about a up and down, very horizontal structure of going from the
vertical.
Like, yeah,
yes.
sorry, that's fine. From the first floor, the mailroom, to the 45th floor, not including the mezzanine. And the only way to get from 1 to 45 is through said hula hoop or circle, where you go round, 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 round till you get up to the top. And Norval Barnes is the only one who's able to go from zero social mobility mm-hmm. till the top. Of course, they want to use him as the idiot, the CEO of
right.
Hudsucker Proxy that will end up destroying
Hudsucker
this.
Industries.
Hudsucker Industries.
What did I say?
You said Hudsucker Proxy.
Well, that's the name of the film. If I'm not an idiot.
But yeah, I mean, he definitely has his dumb moments. And,
sure.
Yeah, where he's, you know, like, really thinks this girl is from Muncie and not willing to see past that.
Hey, go Eagles.
And I think the way Tim Robbins plays him, I think he plays him, like, kind of just genuinely dim in places. And it's effective.
Yeah, but dim in a way that maybe obscures the fact that he's not dim. I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but I just don't think he was that dumb after all.
I think he had, it seemed like for most of the movie, at least, he had one fluke idea that happened to take off.
Two.
It's not even
the frisbee.
By the very end we got the frisbee, but for
so
most of it seemed like
dumb.
It was just the hula hoop's not necessarily a smart idea, it's just that fluke idea that happened to take off.
But he had been thinking about it. He was like drawing these circles, you know,
right.
for the kids.
Right.
So I think that it actually took some
you know,
planning.
For kids.
Is it for kids or for the kids?
It's for kids.
There's no articles. It's just
Yes, it's true. There's no definite article.
All right, I take it all back. You know,
he is
for
an
kids.
Idiot. Yes.
No. I take my okay. phrases back.
You're a lawyer, though.
But I really did love the two central performances, and I love what Jennifer Jason Leigh is doing. Not just
yeah.
because that fast talking like accent is so much fun, and she's doing like a spot on
yeah.
like
transatlantic.
Yeah, transatlantic like Rosalind Russell, His Girl Friday, screwball heroine kind of thing.
Absolutely, His Girl Friday.
Yeah,
anything by Preston Sturges. What if film was more pure about a time that before corruption, or you know, we understood about the corporate culture.
Right. Oh, yeah. And we've got to talk about corporate culture in a sec, but just to finish my point about Amy Archer is that I love that she puts on this tough facade, but she's clearly like not so just unpolished enough to kind of be a real human. She doesn't seem like a caricature. And you can see that there's just this emotion underneath and that she can
That's
get hurt. She can get hurt. And I appreciated that. And that made me identify with her character. That she, like, when Norval Barnes is accidentally insulting her in that scene, she can't help but, like, take it personally and slap him. Because she's a real person.
Yeah. No, I think that's why I liked her performance better, too. Which was that, like, oh, I mean, it's, you know, compared to other female characters. Because the other ones were kind of, like, a caricature or not developed or something like that. But you know, right. She was actually like a main character, which we talked about with Joe last time too, is like this whole muse thing. So I can get that. But I right. still think the other ones were lacking for me.
And maybe by the end, she was only existing to kind of help Norville achieve his dreams. But until then, she seemed to have like real agency and was doing her own thing.
Did we mention yeah. she won a Pulitzer?
I think multiple times.
I think it was a Pulitzer.
A Pulitzer.
Pulitzer.
It's not Pulitzer. It's not like a poop.
I'll bet my Pulitzer on it. Or whatever she said.
That's yeah. exactly what she said.
That's 100%.
Look at me remembering things.
Okay, but so you brought up corporate culture, and I think this film's take on just the corporation is really interesting. Because it's not entirely bad. I mean, Hudsucker Industries is just this... Yeah, it's this giant monolithic building run by a bunch of corrupt old white guys.
Who are laughing, which is the best thing.
Who are constantly laughing.
Great eyebrows.
One of them has fantastic eyebrows.
But that laughing was so funny, like that montage.
Oh, that laughing. No, that. And what a great way to just pass, like, to compress exposition, too. You know, you need to see that Norville Barnes is enjoying his new place. So you just have all these scenes with the connecting element of all these guys just cracking up.
Can we go on a tangent about that for a second,
yes.
though? Because I thought it was so great, because, like, I don't know, somehow it was such a good metaphor for life in that, like, everything can be kind of funny. So it's like nothing specific was happening. It was like, oh, he's getting his, you know, he's getting shaven. Like, he's sitting in his office. And I just thought it was so funny that everybody was laughing the whole time. And it was almost just like, it was making that mundane so interesting for no reason. I really liked that. I kind of found it inspiring in a very weird way. But imagine yeah. if people were laughing at more times like that. It would be really hilarious.
That's the beauty of setting a film like this in a non-naturalistic, very heightened context.
Yeah.
Where I think that's part of what I love about it.
Agree.
Honestly, this probably has better montages than any other Coen Brothers movie. That entire middle hula hoop, the production of the hula hoop and the selling of the hula hoop is so on point. And that music, the cock...
Taking straight out of Pee Wee Herman.
Straight out of Aram Cockaturian's saber dance. Before Pee Wee Herman.
Yep.
And it's so zippy, and you've got like the room full of businessmen at desks with like the signs that say, what will this cost? And you keep cutting back to the guys trying to brainstorm a name, and meanwhile the secretary gets all the way through War and Peace and then switches over to Anna Karenina.
Yeah.
just a great way to show the passage of time.
Yeah,
all those, and I think they're definitely Sam Raimi inspired moments, all these funny little in jokes. But it moves right. so fast and so zippy, and it's
yeah, the zippiness definitely worked better in this one than in other incarnations.
Way better than like in Crime Wave, for example.
A little bit.
Yes. You've got this giant corrupt dehumanizing corporation that treats people like cogs in a machine. But I think I don't think it's an entirely bad portrait of the corporation. I think in many ways they treat the corporation this like a very, I think, American invention with like a sense of wonder and awe, like how did, you know, people were able to make this like amazing machine that's churning these things out, and just watching the gears and the mechanics of the way Hudsucker Industries worked was fascinating.
Question to clarify though, so was the point of Hudsucker like plastics?
Oh, you mean what do they sell?
Yeah, what is Hudsucker?
Oh, they're full on just kind of an all-purpose generic corporation.
Okay.
It kind of represents, yeah, like corporate America.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, like, they made these hula hoops, and then it was like frisbee. So
yeah, like their mission statement is the future is now. I think they just kind of sell everything.
Whoa,
yeah, I like
future
that.
Is now.
It's just so all-purpose.
Is there a line about how failure only looks to the past and the future? Isn't that a line from the
that
film?
That is, I think, Wearing Hudsucker says that. That yeah. failure is not a reason to despair, because despair looks towards the past and hope looks towards the future. I think maybe if it might not be explicit in the script itself, but I think just the way this building is filmed and the clear joy they take in just the set design, and it's a beautiful looking movie and a beautiful looking building. Yeah, from just that first moment, Norville Barnes steps off the bus from Muncie and looks at that big job board of all the scrolling jobs. And I do kind of wish jobs still worked like that.
Oh, that was so cute.
It's way better than Craigslist.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the jobs they came up with, like, I think a bomb...
Rope braider,
mm-hmm. Bombardier, sand hog. What is a
sand hog?
I wrote down sand hog. I don't know what a sand hog is. What job do you think that was?
Should I look it up as their unofficial intern?
You can if you want to. Yeah, I mean, do it.
There's no inflation for us to calculate this time, so.
Damn it, you're right. I mean, I guess you could say inflation. Like, if a hula hoop cost $159 in 1958, how much would it cost now?
Wait, how do you spell Sandhog?
S-A-N-D-H-O-G.
Oh, Sandhog.
Sandhog. Not Sandhog.
Oh, Sandhog?
Sandhog.
Is it one word?
No, two words.
Look, how do I know?
I don't know, because I don't think that's a thing.
How do I
know? But they made that a job.
It's one word.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Sandhog is a slang term given to urban miners, construction workers who work in underground on a variety of et cetera, et cetera. It's one word.
Okay, I'll believe you.
Case dismissed. Oh, yeah. That was not the soundboard.
Case dismissed.
That was the soundboard.
That was the soundboard. Oh, it's specifically work underground on a variety of excavation projects in New York City.
Okay.
So
we are in New York City here, at least some version of New York City.
Right.
The Coen brothers have been accused of being like kind of amoral or cynical filmmakers before, but I think this is a very uncynical and very optimistic film.
Yeah, unusually so.
Yeah.
Where was everybody getting slain and stuff?
Exactly. Nobody's getting killed for no reason. Or I think of like the moment where Paul Newman is dangling by his pants.
Right.
And we have that double fake out pants flashback.
which was amazing.
Where he just decides to give him the double stitch anyways.
And also because he wasn't a nice man at all. He was like, it's just to line your own pockets. No.
And part of the reason Norville Barnes falls as far as he does and gets punished is because he turns into such a jerk in the middle act of the movie. Which is my favorite part of Tim Robbins' performance, actually, is him where the fame of being the hula hoop inventor and getting calls from Ike Eisenhower totally goes to his head.
Right.
Because he manages to stay kind of like dumb and naive even while he's being like an asshole to Amy Archer and this elevator guy.
Right.
He's being like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It doesn't have nearly the je ne sais quoi of the hula hoop.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to make an example of you.
I was not into that.
No, but he's like acting like how he thinks like a boss man should act. And I thought that's kind of endearing even as he's acting like a total asshole. But it's also...
Oh, it's endearing that he was trying?
Yes. he's trying to be the asshole. but it ultimately does lead to his fall. And to the point he's getting chased around literally by like an angry mob.
Yeah.
And people trying to take him to the loony bin with giant butterfly nets. They did that with Paul Newman too, but they also did it with him.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, the guy with the big butterfly net chasing after him.
The big butterfly net.
I know.
Like the funniest thing.
Do you think they ever actually captured...
I don't know.
Captured insane people with that? I mean, look that up as well.
I'm going to try. I'm saying
I love the idea of just trapping somebody in a giant net.
There's a human-sized butterfly net is a Google search.
Of course it is. But there's so many little fun touches like that. That and like this giant Scrabble board that a guy is working on in the newspaper office, which seems like a total throwback to Billy Wilder's The Apartment, this giant office.
Yeah.
I mean, you hated the giant sets. I actually love the giant sets in the giant offices.
No, I don't like the giant sets that are empty. That's my problem. So I think the giant set, like the newspaper one, was filled with desks. I thought
right.
It was funny. It was like, what do you mean? Why is it so
right.
big?
But it's like, it's a contrast to Paul Newman's office, which is ridiculously huge and almost completely empty.
Yeah. I guess there's probably like some sort of symbolism to that. But to me, visually, it's a little bit, it just doesn't quite add up. So
right.
I feel like, yeah, you should have a huge office for no reason. But I also feel like there should be weird lavish things in there to make it make sense to me, because otherwise it just seems sparse, so then it doesn't match up with like this lavish character.
But it kind of fits Paul Newman's character, because Paul Newman wasn't really a lavish character. I think this is kind of a film full of, you know, big dreamers and, you know, like the optimism of the 50s, and he was this very cynical, pragmatic businessman character who didn't care about those things.
I don't think he was pragmatic. He was getting like a massage during board meetings and stuff.
I guess that's true, and he was into cigars, and I guess he had his vices.
Yeah, he didn't seem pragmatic to me. I think it's almost, because I saw it in Miller's Crossing, and I saw it here, where it just, like, it seems like the spaces are a little bit too big. I'm sure it means something, but I think there's a way to have a big space and make that point without it visually being sort of like, it almost seems like an unfinished set to me. It just and I'm sure they had a purpose.
Yeah,
but
no, I think it's for sure deliberate. The giant set, like, yeah, comes back in a serious man. I don't want to spoil things, but these tropes do come back.
By the way, another thing to add to the soundboard. Ugh, spoiler alert.
I probably should.
Yeah. No. I can tell, because understanding the Coen brothers at this point, I can tell that it must be deliberate. But there's, I just think there has to be a way to like tie it in a little bit more. So, mm-hmm. so it somehow needs to be more obvious that it's deliberate. Because
right.
otherwise it just looks like you don't know how to style a set. And that's what I have a problem with. But again, like you said, they're not maybe that detail-oriented, but I'm highly detail-oriented, so well, that kind of bothers me.
See, that's not what I mean. I think they're very, very detail-oriented filmmakers. I think they care hugely about the set design and all these little things. They're just, they don't care about making it period accurate. They care about creating their own weird universe.
Yeah, I slightly disagree with them, though.
In what way?
I mean, I guess it's fine that they make it their own universe, but it doesn't necessarily come off that way. Like, so far, their period pieces kind of come off like inaccurate. And so I think that if you're going to do your own world, I don't think you should be saying, it's 1958, it's 1959. Or like in Miller's Crossing, I don't know if they said it's 1920s.
I don't think they ever said a specific time period in Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, but I think in some parts it was very clear. I mean, I think in many parts, actually, Miller's Crossing, for example, it was like very clear, like, oh, this is the time period we're talking about.
Right.
And then it was kind of like, well, it doesn't quite look like that time period. So I'm fine if they create their own world. I just think they need to decide to do their own world rather than like try to make it a real time period. Because then if you do that, I think you kind of...
So just don't call it out as being specifically 1958, because that makes it... Because it didn't feel like 1958.
Not at all. I mean, it really did feel like the 40s, and I'm glad you said that. I mean, like, at best, I think it could be 1952. That's as far as we're going, as far as accuracy goes, so...
It's almost like what our collective unconscious thinks of, like, the early part of the 20th century. Not the way it actually was, but like a...
Right.
Kind of the way it was represented in movies.
You know, I think that's a great point, because even Miller's Crossing, it's like, oh, this is how we feel it was like in the first early mobs or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I just think it's kind of, in my opinion, a little bit of a mistake to just be like, oh, it's 1959. It's like, no, it's like 1948. Like, I don't know why you're making it 1959. So that's why it kind of...
Totally.
That bothers me.
I think that's fair.
And I think the sets are a little bit too big for that. Like, his big office with the clock... There could have been something about even creating something visually. Like, for example, I could think of a pathway on the rug or something. You know, he had like that big expanse and then it was his desk, but it was just carpet. So instead of just having plain carpet, I would say like there should have been some kind of visual marker making it very obvious that it was a deliberate choice that it was that big. You didn't have to have lots more furniture or anything like that, but just like even something about like, not like a red carpet, obviously, but just like something about like a path that made it clear, like this is an absurdly big space for no reason.
Right.
It's just, to me, it wasn't clear, like this is an absurdly big space for no reason. It was like, oh, we're not quite sure how to fill in a 1950s set. So it's just going to be here.
I thought it was an absurdly big space for no reason. But I for sure got that. I'm like, okay, why? There's no reason for his office to be that big.
Right. But I just assumed that because of knowing the Coen brothers. But visually... Right. It didn't seem that way. And I think standalone visually, I would have liked that more.
Okay.
But this is a small gripe, considering my typical gripe. So.
Yeah, I think it's a fair critique. I think overall, the production design in this film is one of the best production designs they have.
It's good. Yeah. It's good.
Just nitpicking. Yeah. But that's fair. I think just the overall style and like the way the mail room is just this worrying.
I love them. Yeah. The mail room is such worrying, a joke. It was great.
Like this, all this one shot, and people are just running back and forth, and then the blue letter, and they're like throwing papers in the air and freaking out,
and the signs like blue letter,
yeah. I almost see like a wet precursor to Wes Anderson style, and the way these very carefully composed shots and very, very like a huge amount of attention to set design, and I like Wes Anderson too.
More specific to detail, just gonna say that.
Yeah, and kind of the overall whimsy and feel of this movie.
I love whimsy too.
I like whimsy. Yeah.
So I just want to object to any characterization of me as a naturalist, because I'm not.
You're not anti whimsy. You're pro whimsy.
I like whimsy as long as it makes sense.
You're anti fun. Is that what you're trying to say?
I am not anti-fun.
All right.
I'm anti-unrealistic connections. That's all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fair.
And I will get to this when we get to the Big Lebowski, but I also see a ton of the Big Lebowski in this film.
Ew.
From just the use of montages and dream sequences.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
Both the protagonists are kind of these sort of simple characters who are smarter than they look, but are having these strings pulled by these larger forces around them.
Yeah.
And I think they're both kind of films from the height of the Coens as comic directors. And I just, I love just the zippiness of this film, and
yeah,
so many.
It was fun,
especially on third and fourth viewing. So many of those jokes, because the dialogue is so fast, you don't catch them the first time around.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of just great jokes that are flying by in this script. It might be one of their best scripts.
Yeah, there's definitely parts that made me, for the zippiness of it, it definitely made me laugh more than I would have thought.
Yeah,
which I appreciate, because I'm like, all right, you still got me, even though you were kind of being cheesy. So it was good.
Critics hated this movie when it came out. Like,
they absolutely
hated it. Did not understand it. Thought thought it was all style, no substance. Which there might be some truth to that critique.
That's more fair.
It's a fun movie that doesn't necessarily have a whole lot to say. More just kind of taking the style and grammar of like old movies and having fun with it.
Are we sure it has nothing to say though?
I'm not sure. I think it does have some things to say.
So what do you think it has to say?
I think it does have a couple points to just make about just corporation. There's just levels of corporate satire in there, and mm-hmm. this kind of this ridiculous institution that chews people up and spits them out, but also is capable of doing like incredible things and creating hula hoops and filling people with joy.
Yeah.
So kind of an interesting kind of double-sided critique of that. And also just the American dream and this idea that, you know, we start at the bottom and we fall and we rise and we fall.
Totally.
Yeah. And there's for sure good stuff going on at the circles and the lines and...
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea of being a round person and not fitting into the squares square that society pattern. Puts you in.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm a total round. I'm a round.
A round. But round fits into square.
Yeah, it can. You can inscribe it. You can inscribe a circle in a square.
Depending on the size of it, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, no, and just this circle also meaning, yeah, the cycle, the fact everything that goes up and down, but it'll go back up again, and things always come back around.
Doesn't circle also mean, like, wholeness, almost?
Yeah.
Because it's, like, all, it's cyclical, so it just, like, keeps connecting, so it's whole.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, it I totally draw a means lot that. Of circles, like I mentioned. Like when I doodle, I, like, draw a ton of circles.
Is that why you draw? Because it makes you feel whole inside?
I mean, I just love to draw, but, like, I definitely doodle a lot, and, like, I notice, like, man, I draw a lot of circles all the time. What about that? Yeah, but I think something else to it, too, is... Yeah, I just don't think he was as dumb as they wanted him to be. He definitely had dumbness to him. That's, like, I think, that question, but...
I saw one critique saying that they shouldn't have gotten Tim Robbins to play a dumb character because Tim Robbins seems like a naturally smart actor. And it's hard to believe him as a completely dumb guy.
But I don't think he was supposed to be completely dumb.
No, I think it's supposed to be kind of up in the air. I think you're supposed to be asking yourself, okay, is this guy an idiot or is he a genius?
Right. So I actually like that.
Yeah.
And I think like that question of like, I guess being too judgmental or, you know, being quick to come to conclusions about that. Because even in the very beginning, what's his face? Paul Newman's character. What's his name?
Musburger.
Yeah, Musburger. Like he was trying to make him more dumb than he was.
Right.
That was really great too, because it was like, oh, just be an idiot. But it's like he wasn't quite an idiot. But
right.
Also, those credentials didn't make him smart necessarily. Like, so what? You went to
no,
Muncie Business
yeah,
School
no, being
or whatever,
yeah,
so.
Going getting in, like an MBA from the Muncie School of Business Administration doesn't necessarily make you a smart person.
Yeah. So I liked that, and I think that was part of the message too. Maybe. I don't
yeah.
Know. Yeah, could have been.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask the Coens, who said things like, "We're not interested in capitalism as a theme." And just generally very tight-lipped about what their movies mean.
Yeah. It's so annoying, but I like
but
it.
But I don't think this is completely all style, no substance. I think there's stuff going on underneath the surface, even if it feels like just kind of a fun, retro, corporate world caper comedy farce on the surface.
Agree. My dog just sighed in agreement.
Yeah, completely agreed. what was I going to say? There's a couple other... Joel Silver really wanted to cast Tom Cruise as Norville Barnes. the Coens pushed for Tim Robbins.
Good.
They
I
also
think that was better. That would have annoyed me a lot.
Yeah, that would have been awful. Who could not have played that? Also initially offered the role of Musburger to Clint Eastwood.
I could see that too.
And that would have been interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking about him in that.
Yeah,
kind of. I think Paul Newman did great.
Paul Newman, yeah. Oh, Paul Newman is the man.
Yeah, I love him.
Even when, like, there was a moment Paul Newman took his shirt off, and he's got to be, like, in his mid-50s here, and I'm like, damn.
50s? He's older than 50s here, no?
Is he? He might have been older than 50s.
Or maybe he was made to look older, but...
But I was like, damn, you're keeping it together, Paul Newman.
Yeah, I'm going to look up his birthday, because I don't want to know, but... No, I think he had to be at least in his 60s, if not more. I don't know. I'll let you know.
Yeah, and it's Roger Deakins' second film directing for the Coen brothers, and I think he really establishes the Coens' sense of comic grammar here, just with all like the crazy shot compositions and the montages and like the spinning heads as Tim Robbins is spinning out of control. It's just a fun movie.
He was 74. Sorry.
Oh, he was 74 in this, right?
He had to be, right?
Yeah.
He was born in 1925.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's 70.
Yeah. Shit, looks good for 74.
I knew it.
Got to give it to Paul Newman.
Your perception of age is really funny, by the way. You thought that was like a 50-year-old.
Well,
sorry to interrupt you, but I was just like, I got to say this.
Okay, well, Jeremy had to step out for a second, but Jeremy also thought that Paul Newman was 5'6". And Paul Newman is 5'10". I looked it up.
Yeah.
I researched.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins is 6'5". That's why Paul Newman looks tiny compared to Tim Robbins.
Yeah, my kind of height.
Where is Jeremy? We should invite him back. We can't do the quiz without him.
Yeah, let me go check on him.
Okay.
To Jeremy if he wants. But whatever, we'll discuss it later.
We found Jeremy. Jeremy's back. How did you got him out of the bathroom. You picked a lock with a knife.
I sure did.
How did you do that?
It's something called survival skills, and if a friend is on the bathroom floor in a locked door, I just got to get him out.
That's really good to know. I'm going to have you around in emergency situations.
I'm actually
like a human lock picker.
I believe that I've mentioned that I'm very good in emergency situations, so in a situation like this, I just extricated Jeremy from the bathroom.
Now I know. You're like a human, like Jaws of Life.
Pretty much. Pretty much. I'm here for y'all.
I was a baby trapped under a sedan. She just looks at it redder.
Jeremy, before we go into our final segment, we're going to do a couple final thoughts on Hudsucker Proxy. What did you think overall about this movie?
It's one of my favorite Coen Brother films. It's widely overrated. It is
overrated.
Overrated, really?
Underrated.
Mm-hmm. I agree, it is underrated.
Heavily forgotten. It is one of the only Coen Brother
films. It's not on Netflix.
That's true. Where they actually have positive feelings about their protagonist. And it's a very ludicrous film.
There it is. It's kind of a crazy film.
That's Sam Raimi's doing, I think.
Yeah.
Very much. It's definitely his influence.
They actually care about the well-being of Tim Robbins' character in the film.
Do you think they really care?
That's I think an open question. That's always an open question in their film, how much affection they have for their characters. But I think it's clear that they care about him at least a little bit if they want to, because they did go so far out of their way to preserve that second chance for him. They really wanted to see him succeed. They could have just I don't think they would have killed him off necessarily, but they could have just seen him fall flat on his face. It didn't happen.
Yeah, but then that would be the end of the movie. So that'd be kind of silly.
Yeah.
In any other Coen Brothers film, I feel like he would have ended up in a wood chipper.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, he made those tragic mistakes and something bad would have happened to him. Here, it didn't happen that way.
Oh, you know what? I can't speak for future films, but what I feel like is tragic things would happen to everybody around him and he would be the last man standing and he would somehow not die, but watch everybody important in his life be destroyed.
Okay,
that's my perception.
Emotionally destroyed. Exactly. But
right,
that doesn't happen.
Like, you might as well just die.
That doesn't happen either. He gets the dame, he gets his job back, everything is happy.
Yeah.
It's a real, genuine, happy ending for the Coen brothers, which doesn't always happen for sure.
You know, for kids.
You know, for kids. Yeah, for me.
So many levels.
This was a movie that the first time I saw it, I was with a lot of the critics who called it all style, no substance. And I thought, okay, there's just. It's not things here aren't really working the way they should. But the more I have watched it, the more I thought, man, this really comes together. I now think it's one of the best examples of the Coens at their comic peak.
Yeah, I thought it had funny moments that I enjoyed, and you know, I wasn't paying the closest attention as discussed earlier, and it kind of worked for that way. Like I think it worked as a movie that's like, yeah, you just like put it on, you're like hanging out with people in the meantime. I'm sure that if I watched every single detail, that would be more revealing to me. But having not watched every single detail, it was still like there was funny parts, and I can say I enjoyed it.
You don't need to. No, it really is. It's a fun, entertaining movie, if nothing else.
Yes.
It might be the only Coen Brothers film that I can think of at this moment where they actually care about what happens to their protagonist. Mm-hmm. Where it's not like, hey, let's...
I mean, it's, sometimes the point is so good, you got to make it twice.
What you guys can't see is the beautiful eye contact that Josh and I just made, very tentatively, but very really.
Yeah.
Jeremy, we love you.
It is a shocking... This movie also did very poorly at the box office. Cost $25 million, made $3
million. $25 million to make?
I mean, that's a 1994 dollars.
30 plus million.
Wait, it cost $25 million?
Yeah.
All right, time to calculate some inflation.
Yeah, no, this
that's
was...
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it was. This is, I said, we said, it's the Coen brothers' biggest budget and also their biggest flop at the time.
That's right.
Yeah. Nobody went to see this. Maybe because it's called the Hudsucker Proxy, which doesn't seem to promise fun times at the movie theater, just based on the title. But it is fun times at the movie theater.
The Hudsucker...
What?
I'm trying to think of what's that... What's that stuff you call...
Epoxy? The Hudsucker Epoxy.
Hudsucker blue. Hydrogen Peroxide. May have been a bit better title.
All right. Inflation master.
I'm trying. I'm on inflation.
Whoops. That should not have been there.
How dare you?
Inside Jeremy Turkin.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah, while we're waiting, let's go inside Jeremy Turkin. That's all we need.
Eight,
Jeremy.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh, no. Okay, now I got to come up with a question off the top of my
head. 1 second, please.
In the film The Hudsucker Proxy, there's lots of weird jobs that Norval Barnes
improvise.
Is considering. Mm-hmm. What weird jobs have you considered taking or have taken?
Well, I took a job with the woman that I ended up marrying.
You worked with her?
No, I took a job with her father as a groundskeeper at a baseball stadium in Chicago. I won't say which one, but it's on the north side. And
got it. Yankees.
Yeah, you got it. Chicago, north side. I was like, you know what? I could end up the rest of my days working as a groundskeeper for this baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the job that I took. And I was like, you know what?
My dad used to sell peanuts at Dodger Stadium.
Ooh,
cool.
Yeah.
My dad used to be a taxi driver.
Really? That was my dream as a child.
I know. He came to this country and drove taxis.
Meet interesting people, wear that hat. There's worse jobs.
Yeah.
Sell peanuts, whatever.
Sell peanuts in your taxi cab. Hey, have some taxi peanuts while you're being driven around.
Mm-hmm.
Great
mm-hmm.
business model.
That's right.
Anyhow, any more thoughts about the Hudsucker Proxy?
Yeah, just that $25 million today is $40 million. A little bit over.
Yeah, legitimate. Spent mm-hmm. a lot of money for indie directors.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot.
And I think it paid off in the production design of the movie, but it didn't pay off in terms of getting people to show up.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. They might make up for it, though, in their next couple of movies. But we'll talk about that when we get to those next couple of movies. It's officially time, because it's 2:55 in the morning.
Boy,
let's play our final segment, which is called Raising Arizona. Jeremy,
okay, we got a family here.
Jeremy, I hope you're ready for this. You're about to face off against Jackie.
I'm so ready. It's disgusting. If I lose, heads
I know.
Will roll.
You're
I may have passed
you're 3-2 right
on
now.
The bathroom floor for, I don't know, it felt like 3 hours, maybe less.
It was less than that. I can guarantee it was less.
Probably less.
But it's good, because that means you rested up your brain. Now you're going to participate in this quiz where we do 10 questions about fads and trends.
I think I know a little bit about trends and fads.
I think you might. You're almost only the trendiest person in this room.
True that.
All right, so here we go. Let's dive into this. Question number one. Which of these real historical diet fads is actually considered healthy today?
I wouldn't know that. I hate diets, but keep it going.
Okay, A, the cotton ball diet, where you swallow cotton balls before every meal to make your stomach feel full.
Wait, the question is whether these are real?
All of these are real. Uh-huh. Which one is actually considered healthy by modern doctors?
By modern doctors. Yeah.
The cotton ball diet.
I was in fourth grade, I swallowed an entire cotton ball for a dime, which was first place because the guy who was below me swallowed it for a nickel. Just saying, cotton ball, no joke.
And that's why your favorite coin's the dime. Okay, the cotton ball
diet. Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Still a nightmare.
And he came back.
And he's
okay,
back.
Okay, that was the cotton ball diet. The baby food diet, which is you replace 2-3 meals a day with baby food. And the chewing diet, where you chew your food without swallowing until it's liquefied and then spit out the leftovers.
Oh, you say ding, by the way, but you should know that, Jer.
Yeah.
Ding, B.
You say the baby food diet. Jeremy, yeah. What do you think? Cotton ball diet, baby food diet, or the chew your food diet?
If I can't choose it.
You can choose whatever you want.
I can choose whatever I want, though. For real, though, dog?
Mm-hmm.
For
like
real.
Chewing your cud like a kosher cow.
Like a cow.
I feel like that's the way to go, though.
See?
See. Right. Jeremy gets a point.
Oh, all right.
This is how this is going to go.
We're on starting off a very bad foot, yeah. But let's keep it going.
The chewing diet was a favorite of John Rockefeller and John Kellogg, and modern doctors actually say that while chewing your food and then spitting it out isn't necessarily going to make you lose weight, the fact that you're thinking about every bite and spending more time thinking about how much food you're eating means that you will eat less, which is good.
That's healthy, though.
That's healthy.
Something to get your stomach juices going, and then, I don't know. That's Jeremy, not any of the animals.
That was Led Zeppelin. Momentarily stopped.
The immigrant song.
Yeah.
I like that song.
Question number two.
Push you down.
What is the origin of the limbo? Dan's called the limbo. Originated where? A, it was a way for the Marquis de Sade to torture prostitutes. B, it was a game that Mary Todd Lincoln invented for her son Robert. C, it was a Calypso funeral ritual.
I'm going to say A.
Okay.
Yo, but if we talk about Mary Todd Lincoln, we talk about Sally Field and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, two people with three names apiece.
Sally Field has only two names.
I have three names.
Yo, Jackie LaChalz, what it is, what
in
it
the
is.
House, in the
yeah,
house.
JLZ.
Well, I forgot the option.
Way for the Marquis de Sade to torture prostitutes. A game Mary Todd Lincoln invented for her son Robert. Nice. A Calypso funeral ritual.
I'm talking about the Calypso.
You're saying Calypso funeral ritual?
Oh, you're doing a tell. But go for it. What's the answer?
Jeremy gets another point.
You have tells. Yeah. I want the listeners will figure this out too. You're always like, you're slightly excited when people get the right answer.
Well, at least you'd already guessed at that point. So
yeah,
I wasn't giving anything away.
But it's really interesting what kind of tell you have. But yeah,
yo,
keep it going.
I'm gonna be poker-faced.
Literally, Jeremy beats me in this state.
If I was the Spice Girl, I'd be posh. What it is, my favorite comedian is Daniel Tosh.
And we eat goulash and galoshes.
Yo, what it is, I'm going to eat some goulash.
Yeah, in Trinidad, the limbo.
If I'm in Pac-Man, I'm eating the goulash.
Okay, in Trinidad, the limbo is a funeral dance representing the transition from life to death. And if you emerge from beneath the pole unscathed, it means you've made it past death one more time.
I hate this.
Yo, dog, ain't even a question, though.
I think, by the way, I want to point something out, is that this time of the night, I'm very zen. Like, this
good.
Is my most zen hour.
I'm
good.
So dang.
Good.
I literally might be the least competitive I've ever been right now, just
good.
Because this
yo,
is
the least competitive that I ever been. My name is Jackie Lozane, and I'm totally zen.
Let it wash over you.
My name is Josh Richman. I'm kind of a man.
I just want to clarify for our listeners why I might not be as belligerent as usual. And it's just because I'm chill at this time.
Channel that zen feeling for question number three.
Oh,
Which of these 90s... Oh my God.
Just do it. Just do it. He's not here.
Which of these 90s hits references a famous fad from the 1920s? A. Counting Blue Cars by Dishwalla.
B.
Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger. C. Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
I believe it's Tub Thumping, but whatever. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You ain't never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
So did you say C?
So that's C. And then B is, and then B was, I'm not sick, but I'm not well.
Oh, what's A?
And then A is, we count only blue cars in the street now. Tell me questions like children often do.
I just want to say B. Just I don't want to get this over with.
Okay.
Okay.
You're going to C?
Oh, it's C.
It's B.
B.
Oh, okay, good.
See, you don't know my tell.
It's in the night.
Okay.
All right.
In the night, yeah.
Daddy boy. Daddy boy. If this is Miller's Crossing, it'd be totally perfect, though.
I sang that song in choir.
Sitting on flagpoles was a trend in the
20s. Harvey Danger. Question number four.
Question number four.
You want to switch off and I'll read them off?
Well, then you're going to see the answers. Yeah.
No, but you already know the answers, I guess.
I already know the answers, yeah.
Josh,
stop! You can't keep popping me.
Josh, just ignore him.
Okay.
Ignore him.
I could just turn your mic off. Wait, did I turn? Whose mic? Yeah, I did turn his mic off. No, wait.
That was mine.
Oh, wait.
I get knocked down.
No, you know what, Jeremy? Okay, there we go. It's like the driver. You can't touch the board.
Yeah, you cannot touch the board.
Oh, really?
All right, sit down. Sit down.
You sit down, Josh.
This is a living nightmare. Jeremy?
Jeremy, come on. Jeremy. Buddy.
Buddy.
You're going to wake Franco up. I think what we forgot to mention is Franco's sleeping.
Oh, yeah, there's a sleeping person in this house this entire time. Okay. True or false? The baby on board sign that was trendy in the mid-80s was developed by someone whose infant child was actually killed in a car accident.
False.
You say false?
True. Cierto.
Is this mic on?
Yeah.
No, it's not. I turned it off.
Wait, I'm on Josh's mic.
Recently on the show Shark Tank, someone here actually happened to sell a product even though the baby died of SIDS. So, yo, this just got real, homie. It's cierto.
You think it's true? I think it's false. But
no, it's... Hey, Jackie, look at me.
I'm looking at you, bro.
Cierto. Cierto means true in Espanol.
Okay, so you say true.
Sitting on...
No, you're not sitting. You're standing.
25 sitting on 25 mil. But sit.
You're standing. You're standing.
Yo,
right,
I'm
now.
I'm like 20, not sitting on...
29
Wait,
mil.
Wait, hold on. Let me do the math.
Inflation rate? Oh,
no,
sit down then.
40,000. Just saying that.
Okay, your mic's back on. You, Jackie, you are correct. You get a
boom! I knew it! I knew it.
A lot of babies die, though, in real life, though.
Yeah, it happens. It's pretty fucking sad.
Can we drop a beat? What you guys want to flow about?
I don't know. You can flow if you want to. Freestyle for us.
What you want me to rap about?
Babies.
Babies. Babies. Babies.
Babies.
You're crazy. You got pregnancy brain? That's just regular insane. Jackie Lacozay.
Got pregnancy brain. It's infected with hormones.
All right, I just want to stop
it right
now. Because
you got a baby.
Jackie Lacozay like, does not have a pregnancy brain right now.
She ain't got no brain. But she got a lot.
She got mad beatboxing skills. And she's even turntable skills. Pregnancy, you see? It makes your body, belly, fat. Full of fat with baby. Like you're eating a baby. Why would he eat a baby?
Has anyone ever
it's not
seen
cool.
Josh get his armpit waxed? I've seen it on the internet.
Yeah, that video does exist. Google it if you don't believe me. Question number five. Which of these was not a real fad from the early 20th century? Water spouting. Filling your mouth with water and seeing who could spit it the farthest.
Not in the 20th century. Not a fad.
Out of these three, one of them was not a real fad.
Yeah.
Two of them were real. Dance marathons. Non-stop dance parties for a paying audience.
Yo, that and happened.
Hunkering. Squatting in a group to see who could squat the longest.
I'm going to say C.
What was option number A, dog?
Water spouting. Filling your mouth with water and seeing who could spit it the farthest.
I'm going to go with A.
Well, Jeremy's right. I made that one up. But hunkering is a real thing. People used to just squat. I know you don't. I know you don't.
Let's just go to the next question.
I do want to tell you a fact about dance marathons, though, is that they often lasted for a month.
Wow.
Non-stop dancing for a month. Participants were allowed 15 minutes of rest per hour, and people would pay a quarter to watch them. And after the first day, it was less dancing than just people kind of stumbling from side to side.
Sleep? I don't get that.
Yeah, just kind of just dancing for money, trying not to die. And then the fad got less popular when people actually started dying.
That's that was like the early 20th century version of people playing video games for nonstop hours.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Really pretty fucked up, actually.
Dude, there's a wolf in this house.
It's just a husky.
It's not a cat. It's not a mouse.
It's my spirit animal.
It's your spirit animal. I've seen the way you draw.
Question number six.
It's
we're
like
halfway
a
through this quiz.
With four freaking claws.
We're halfway through this quiz, guys.
We're halfway through this quiz.
Don't guys. This is not,
it's not
guys
what
situation.
It was.
This is a singular
it's
problem.
What it is.
This is not a plural problem.
Hey, y'all looking at me with those two big eyes.
Question number six.
Pies off of windowsills. Yeah, I'm talking pies.
I do have to agree with him. That's a real problem. Don't do that, Jackie. Pies are meant to be eaten by the people who bake them. They say leave them on windowsills to cool, not for you to eat.
Oh, my bad.
A lot of carbs, a lot of sugars, a lot of cholesterol.
Question number six. What fad toy did Lyndon Johnson's chief of staff pass out to 60 members of the Johnson administration as a stress reliever? A Super Ball. B, a pet rock. C, silly putty.
C, silly putty.
Silly putty? Jeremy?
GMO Jeremy Sherman.
Super Bowl, pet rock, silly putty.
Lyndon B. Johnson shouldn't even be president.
What? Oh, yeah, well, yeah, because he got in because of an assassination. You're right.
Yeah, he kind of orchestrated that assassination. He just...
I do not endorse that view.
He don't endorse that view.
Except the mystery does not accept that mystery.
No, I do not accept that mystery.
It's not a mystery.
What's your answer,
I'll
though?
Allow it.
Why would you allow that, Jackie?
I did not allow that.
Super Bowl, pet rock, yeah, silly putty. Okay.
Would you choose Jack 1?
I said silly putty.
All right. Okay. I guess then I got no option but a silly ball.
Silly putty or Super Bowl?
Can I just choose both?
You can't. It's only one answer.
Jackie, would you choose?
I said silly putty.
You said silly putty, but you got the silly shoes. It's not the silly me, yo, girl. It's the silly yous.
Burn.
I'm not confizzy with Confucius. I'm just confused.
Yeah, what's up with that Confucius guy?
Yo, he just Asian. He ain't.
Podcast, you know, listeners, it is 3:10 a.m.
And if you don't answer the question, you forfeit.
What's the question, dog?
FIFA rules.
FIFA. What toy did Lyndon Johnson pass out to his administration as a stress reliever? Super Ball, Pet Rock, Silly Putty.
I'm going to go with Silly Putty, dog.
You both say Silly Putty, and you're both wrong. It was a Super Ball.
Jesus, what's a Super Ball?
What's a Super Ball?
Yeah.
It's not a bouncy ball.
The super me or just the super you. It's super all.
It's a bouncy ball.
It's not about the super rise. It's about the super fall. It's not about the super walk. It's the super crawl. It's not
good.
About the super short. It's the super tall.
Damn. God
he
damn.
He stood up for that.
You were it's not about the super moment. It's about the super stall.
Oh my God. You are on fire.
It's not about the super him. Fire. It's about the... Super, what else? I'm just fire. Super Hall.
Question number seven. Why were bad teeth a fashion statement in Elizabethan times?
Yo, it's the Brits, though.
Yeah, it was the Brits. A, they were a sign you ate lots of sweet food. B, having an unusual mouth odor was considered sexy.
Ugh.
C, perfect teeth meant you might be a witch.
A?
Jeremy?
What was option B?
Having an unusual mouth odor was considered sexy.
Let me tell you a thing about a mouth odor. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of things that rhyme with mouth odor. I can't think of anything unless you...
Schroeder from Peanuts.
Yo, unless you watch a Schroeder. Yo, my favorite character is Game of Thrones. Yo, it's Hodor.
That's not bad. Okay, why were bad teeth a fashion statement in Elizabethan times? They were a sign you ate a lot of sweet food. Having an unusual mouth odor meant you were considered sexy. Perfect teeth meant you might be a witch. Which of those three explanations?
Perfect teeth meant you might be a witch. However, if you're going to eat the ground, you might as well eat your own ditch. You got three genies. You might as well eat your own wish.
This podcast is never going to end.
This ain't never going to end.
So your answer is perfect teeth meant you might be a witch.
No, nope, that's not the option.
Okay.
What's the second option?
Having an unusual mouth odor was considered sexy.
Yo, but for real though, if I breathe what they call in Australia, the poop fairies, that means I'm sexy as hell. That's option B, dog.
Okay, you're still wrong.
What's option C?
No, you answered already.
You already answered B and C, and they were both wrong.
Okay.
It's A.
That's
I'm
so
going
obvious.
With yep. option A because my name Boom. Is Jackie Lacrosse.
See, back in the day, poor people only ate veggies and meat, and only rich people could afford things like pastries and sweets, which would rot their teeth. So rich ladies would actually blacken their teeth to make it make them look worse than they actually were.
People are so disgusting.
People are disgusting, and it's weird how beauty standards change.
They're,
you know,
the hipsters
I'm blacking
of the
my
day.
Teeth.
They were so
to make
hip.
Me look
yeah.
worse.
Hipster. Super hipster.
They're like, ooh, we're gonna
I'm
like
carrying
danger.
A coach,
oh, man.
But
I've eaten so many
purse.
Pastries, you know.
I'm gonna eat so many pastries because it's a curse.
Question number 8. Which of
Yo,
these?
Yo, there's not a lot of us. There's just a dearth.
Question number 8. Which of these is not a real entry in the BuzzFeed list? 20 insanely dangerous fads your teenager is trying right now. Vodka eyeballing. Getting a quick buzz by pouring vodka into your eyeball.
Vodka in
B,
the eyes.
B. Google Earth pool parties. Finding someone with a pool on Google Earth and flash mobbing their pool. C. Pixie smoking. Pouring the contents of a pixie stick out and inhaling the dust.
I'm sorry, I thought you had 4 options right there.
Nope, only 3.
I don't understand the
he
options.
He wanted 4 options. He only
okay.
ended up
the first
with 3.
One is 20 dangerous
it's not
things.
No, no, no.
It's not Josh, but it's just only
oh,
me.
Oh, the yeah. question is about what are the 20 yeah. dangerous things that your teenager
which of the Which of these entries did not show up on the list 20 insanely dangerous fads your teenager is trying right now?
The Google Earth pool parties.
That's the fake one?
Yeah. What's the first one, dog?
Vodka eyeballing. Getting a buzz by pouring vodka into your eyeball.
Yo, I do that every day, but I do it with more than vodka.
What do you use?
Visine.
I use Visine.
Okay, well, you're not going to get buzzed off that.
All right, but here it is, though.
There's probably a drop of alcohol in there.
You're not going to get buzzed off that.
I'm going to go with option C.
Jeremy,
forget what it
does.
Be.
Pixie smoking, inhaling pixie stick dust.
And my name is Jeremy, and that's the reason my wife left me.
Jeremy gets a point.
What the
hell? Yeah, that was the fake one.
Jeremy gets a point. Jackie smokes a joint.
I do not smoke joints.
What? And one more from that list, because I can't resist. Apparently this is a real fad. Twilight biting. Biting your girlfriend or boyfriend with a bite that breaks the skin. To, like, make them a vampire just like you.
What world do we live in? Okay.
Well, pretty fucked up one. Question number 9. Comic books until the 70s used to feature ads for x-ray specs that promised to let you see through skin and clothing for only $1. If you actually ordered one of these pairs of specs, what did you get in the mail? A. A feather sandwiched between 2 pieces of paper with holes punched in it. B. A small cardboard box on a stick with the inside coated in tin foil. C. A piece of red cellophane with 2 pieces of string on either side. Which one is the real x-ray specs?
In what year?
This was like in the 60s and 70s.
Can you repeat them again?
Yeah. If you ordered x-ray specs from a comic book, what did you actually get? What yeah. were the... a feather sandwiched between 2 pieces of paper with holes punched in it.
Nah.
A small cardboard box on a stick with the inside coated in tinfoil. A piece of red cellophane with 2 pieces of string on either side.
I think it's C, but... Maybe
yeah, if she choose C, I guess I gotta choose B. They call me Mr. Cellophane because I'm John C. Riley.
C. Riley. Yeah. Well, you're both wrong.
I'm from Chicago, so I gotta choose A. Because that's not the way we be, because that's just not the way.
Because if you hold out your arm and look through the glasses in low light, it kind of looks like you're looking at a bone, the feather. Yeah. Apparently that was the logic. I don't know if that's actually true.
I was born with the last bone.
I thought it was feather.
I'm all alone.
Okay. I believe Jackie's up by 1 point with 1 question left.
Thank God.
So, you can still win this, Jackie. But if you correctly answer this question, what percentage of mattresses sold today are water beds? 2%, 6%. 10%.
What it gonna be, girl? Which way?
What percentage of mattresses sold today are water beds? 2%, 6%, 10%. What?
I'm gonna say 10%.
Yo, girl, you wrong.
Oh, you're gonna match it?
Only 6%.
I think it's 6, but I'm gonna say 10. Just
wait.
It's 40 days
for strategy.
No, right? It's 40 days of Lent.
Wait, are you 6 or 10?
I'm talking about 6%. I'm talking about.
Pick 6
what
or 10.
What I meant.
Yeah, is it 6% or 10%? You got to pick.
I'm only talking 6. I ain't talking 10.
Okay. And you're saying 10, you're saying
no,
6.
No, I'm saying 6.
Wait, you're just matching it no matter what you're matching it?
No matter what I say, she's going to match what I say. Because she's not Josh Richmond, she's Jackie Lacroze.
Yeah, you're just, okay, now you're just being a game player. You're just trying to win no matter what.
It's not about the game. It's about the way you play. It's not about God. It's about how you pray.
You got to pick how you feel for
real. It's not about the predator. It's the eagle who pray.
I thought it was 6, and then he was going to say 10. So then I was like, well, maybe I'll match him so that I win.
Girl, but 6%.
I'm going to say 6, though.
Yeah, but she's...
I really did think it was 6. And if we're both wrong, I mean...
There ain't no win in this life unless you do it right. It's so not about the dark.
Really, that's really
it's
true.
It's about the light. I'm not talking going left. I'm talking going right. It's not about the scares. It's about the fright.
Those aren't antonyms. Those are synonyms.
But why are you... Synonyms means the opposite. It's not about the way you stand. It's about the way you sit.
Okay.
Look, it's not about the fire. It's about the way you lit.
You guys are both right at 6%.
Thank you, God.
The waterbed was invented.
I knew it was 6%.
The waterbed was invented in the 60s. It was originally just a water-filled bag called the pleasure pit. That didn't even have a frame or anything. It was just like a bean bag. Then somebody put a frame on it and it took off. Anyhow.
I respect that.
That's fair. So, Jackie, you win again. You're on a roll.
Jackie's on a roll.
So,
it's not about the half, it's about the whole.
Jackie, pull up your Twitter, because I want you to read your funniest tweet from this week.
Oh, come on.
Yes, so you can plug your Twitter properly.
It's not about the survey, it's about the poll.
Well, here's what's
it's
interesting.
It's not about the moment. It's about
the moment. Are we talking about
load.
What people seem to appreciate the most?
I don't know. I want to hear what you think was your funniest tweet from the last week.
It's not about the call. So, it's about the host.
I think this was funny. Okay. I didn't get any likes, but I think it was funny. And then I can talk about the one that did get response. I don't know. Here's what I think was funny. I said, online dating. 1, reverse Google image search dude for your friend. 2, discover name. 3, realize you went out with him 4 years ago. 4, give up on love. That's Jeremy Brady.
Yeah, that was
Can
Jeremy's...
we turn off his mic or okay. what?
No, I think that was an endorsement. He was giggling.
I love that giggle
breathing.
So hilarious.
Thanks, Jeremy.
She's not accepting anything except the mysterious. She's not fast, but yo, for real, she's furious.
Can I explain that tweet?
Yo,
that
she problem, wants to explain it to y'all.
The problem with this tweet, and I understand it's a tweeting strategy, and you know it has to be contained.
Yeah, you got to strategize.
No, I get it. But that was actually a very funny thing that happened, which is on online dating. Like, I was with my friend, we were checking a guy out, and she's like, "Yo, like, can we figure out who this guy is?" And recently, I had heard about reverse Google image searching, which had never worked for me before. But I was like, "Yeah, why don't we like just try with this guy's main profile?"
Sometimes it works.
You never know.
Yeah.
This is the first time I tried it. We like discovered him. It was unbelievable. We figure out the guy's name. We're looking at him.
What his name is?
I'm not gonna say that. But we figure out the guy's name, and then I was like, "Wait a second.
Wait a second.
I went out with this guy. Like, I'm pretty, because that name, I was like, I think that," and I'm looking at my phone, and I look at my phone, and I see the guy's name, but the weird part was that he looked totally different than he does today. So, but it was literally like 4 years ago. So I thought it was super weird, and I was just like, the fact that you can't recognize a person anymore 4 years later on OkCupid is a little bit terrifying. I don't know if it was OkCupid, it could have been JDate, I don't know. But it's kind of terrifying, and also hilarious, and the kind of thing that makes you think, like, I just gotta get off the internet, so... Whatever, I don't care.
It's amazing that reverse Google image search has never worked for me.
It's never worked either. Yeah. It worked. I mean, we watched.
Sometimes
it and
I will
we were
type
both...
somebody's like OkCupid name into Google and see if something comes up,
if
but that
have
never
an
happens.
Avatar, yeah. No. Try the Google. You'd be surprised. I think the reverse Google image search works. It was unbelievable. I just can't believe that I didn't recognize the guy.
Jackie, if people want to date you, what's your JDate handle?
You know what?
You don't have to answer
that. Actually have the best. The best JDate Twitter handle ever created.
What is?
I also use it on OkCupid. I can't say it because it will ruin
right.
me. But oh my God.
Oh, trust me, the Accept the Mystery stalkers will come
being,
out of the woodwork.
For being not funny, it's hilarious. I get laughs all the time. It's probably the best pun any of you have ever heard.
Well, there you go, guys.
That's too bad. Jackie,
guys, think of the best pun you've ever heard and just type that into JDate. And
yeah, that's me.
Is it Macklin?
No, it's not Macklin. It's not
but
Macklin. MacLean.
Yeah, it's MacLean, dude. Come on.
Although, okay, you want to hear another funny twit?
Sure.
Twit.
Hey,
tell me about a funny twit.
Here's a funny tweet. This happened today. I got
what
two
did that twit
favorites
what?
And a reply. So we're really working on my Twitter game, but I said, signing on the iPad at my favorite cafe and can see the owner's iMessages pop up. Ray, what vodka to bring to the party, bestie? Hashtag technology. I feel like these are stories that, like, you kind of have to be there, and I'm going to work on this and make it better, but it was really funny. I was signing, and this is what popped up at the top of the screen, and, like, the owner was just, like, typing on his iPhone, and I thought that was funny.
I like it. I like that you're learning to tweet, though. You're making tweets context-independent. That's a good skill.
I'm working
on your tweeting strategies.
I want to announce
Twitter
also,
monetization.
Yeah. Well, I got a response from some beverage person, but I just want to say that I am going to be taking sketch classes too, and I think my Twitter game is going to significantly improve after I do that. So,
if only they offer Twitter classes, right?
Oh, I think it's going to translate. But, pretty soon they'll have that. So anyway, guys, my Twitter is getting better. In the meantime, I'm still nice. I'm still cool. So you should still follow me. And one day I'll be hilarious on Twitter.
You're already getting funnier. I think I liked your online dating one. It's like a whole story in one tweet.
And it's a real life story. I think I'm probably going to stick to real life hilarious things that happen. Because they happen. I just have to reduce it to 140 characters.
The funniest thing is real life, right?
I think so. Also, you should know what my Twitter handle is. You probably know it now. But it's
MacLeane.
MacLeane.
That's right.
MacLeane. She dirty, she ain't clean. She's not.
Damn. That's not true.
Funky,
that's pretty,
she
that's pretty
super
harsh,
lame.
Man. Well, at least she, okay, that. So she doesn't bathe, but at least she's skinny. That's what you're saying.
Boom, I'll take it. One or the other. I'd rather be skinny.
Jeremy, where
she's
can
people... She's not my best friend, but she my favorite fiend.
Jeremy, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, internet.com.
Okay.
Just go to internet.com.
Oh, I thought it was internet.net.
Yo, but I don't do that.
That's or enter.net.
Yo, you can find me on... Twitter, J Turkin. You can find me on Tumblr. No E in there. It's Twerkin' Turkin. I ain't on welfare because I'm always working.
Are you really at Twerkin' Turkin on Tumblr?
That is 100% accurate. I do not post, but I do follow anybody that I think is humorous, hilarious, or accepting the mysterious.
Boom.
Great. I am, as always, at Radio TFP on Twitter, and check out joshrichmond.net and check out acceptthemystery.net.
Radio Trust Fund, baby!
That is what that stands for.
I didn't know that!
That's what that stands
Radio
for.
How exciting!
Yeah.
Yo, you should definitely check out Radio TFP Trust Fund, baby. You should definitely check out MacLean. She got a J-Date account. She my favorite girl.
Alright. Look, Jewish men, you can holler at your girl, but you know what?
Unless you short or bald, then don't even bother. She likes the tall guys, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Which I frankly think is discriminatory, but whatever, your preference is your
Look,
preference.
I like tall Jews, I'm not gonna lie. But
I feel like this is a 3-hour podcast and I ruined the last 90.
You did.
175
wow,
minutes
I just looked down at my last name on my Twitter and I thought it was misspelled, but no, I spelled it right.
That literally. Would be embarrassing, right?
Nah, it could happen to anybody with my name. I guess we have nothing to plug. I just, you know what? You know why I feel like that? Because I know Josh and I have something amazing coming up. We just don't know what it is yet, so I'm sensing it ahead of time. Boom!
There's
something.
Oh, trust me. There's cool stuff happening in Accept the Mystery's future. It's just we record these a month ahead of time, so...
We don't know exactly what
we don't know exactly
it is,
what
but
it
by
is.
The time you're listening to this, something dope is
something
happening.
Something going to happen.
So check us out on Twitter.
Look, it is time to wrap this up.
It's
guys.
It's 3:28 a.m.
It's 3:28 a.m.
Wrap it up. If it's like a mummy,
guys,
wrap it up. Rap city, bitch.
If you got a schmear, you gotta pap it up.
For all you guys listening who are like, why did
you
decide to record this?
You better clap it up.
So late, after playing a drinking game while watching the Hudsucker Proxy, I wanted to shake things up a little bit. And I think we succeeded.
And I think Josh and I did great. We love you too, Jeremy.
I think Jeremy was the only one playing the drinking game.
No. Some of us are Russian, so we did better.
No, he has nothing left to live for. You know what I'm saying? This is the last chance you're going to hear anyone on this show with Jack MacLean and Radio
Tia
Bang.
I just want to point out that Jeremy's alter ego is a rapper.
Yeah, he's a rapper.
I never knew you were this much of a rapper. This doesn't come out when you're sober.
He's not going to snap.
Before,
yo, he a clapper.
Like,
you want the lights to go on?
Jeremy's like, he wants to be urban.
No, I'm from the herbs, though. I ain't from the suburbs, though.
Yeah,
yo,
urban.
You want to smoke something? You better smoke some herbs, though.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the Coen Brothers movie Fargo. Which, one of their best.
Wait, are we doing Fargo next week?
We're doing Fargo next week. We sure are.
great.
Yep. I will be back to make sure this is a 9-hour podcast. If you have any fans left, I'm going to make sure they go away.
That's good. I'm glad you've dedicated yourself to that mission.
He's been doing real good so far, so thank you for that, Jer.
It's okay. A little bit of editing magic, and you're going to sound like a, I don't know.
Sober.
Like an intentional.
Like, yeah. Yeah, you're going to sound like Jeff Goldblum.
Red Rover,
you're sound
Red
great.
Rover, make Jeremy sound sober.
Guys, thanks for listening.
My favorite kind of athlete is a Harlem Globetrotter.
That almost rhymed. Thank you for listening to another episode of Accept the Mystery and hanging out with us.
ATM!
Until next time, peace and love.
Peace and love.
Lots of peace and love.
JFIO.
Sit down. Sit down.
All right.
Okay.
Headphones on.
Okay, Jeremy, you first. Talk into the microphone.
I want to take pictures, too.
Check, check, check.
JFIO.
Keep going, keep going.
That's a Coen Brothers podcast.
Okay, I'm turning you up a little bit.
Okay.
All right, Jackie.
Yo, I'm here.
Good. Okay.
Oh, I sound good. Oh,
yeah,
I can hear myself.
Sound good. Yeah, you sound good.
What's up, everybody?
Okay.
Everybody in the club getting
tipsy.
Okay. JF. All right. We're good
are
on
we,
that.
Are we ready for this?
I think we're ready.
You're ready for
Wait,
this.
Wait, but is the world ready for this?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Josh, don't get upset. I swear to God, it's going to be the best podcast ever.
Bill podcast ear day. Ear day.
I'm about to take
day.
Some photos up in
All
this.
Right.
Oh, that's what's up. All right, get in there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, no, about this.
Oh,
he's not really looking at you. No, but you know what, Jeremy? You got to get a little lower because the mic is...
Yeah,
wait, 1, 2. Yeah, that's perfect. 1, 2, 3. Just look at me. Why aren't you looking at me? Just look at me. That's great. That's perfect.
Okay.
Well, I'd ask you to take some photos, but I better just take a selfie.
Take a selfie.
Take a selfie because I don't think I can trust fucking Jeremy.
What?
Franco, wake your ass tushy up.
Don't wake up Franco. She got to sleep. She got class tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's take more photos.
Okay. Okay, I think we're ready to go. Are you guys ready?
So ready, Josh.
All right.